Hello, and welcome back to Robbinsdale Revisited, the podcast where we dig into the stories, the people, and the moments that shaped our little suburb. I'm Crystal Boyd, a member of the Robbinsdale Historical Society. We're heading into the 1980s, a decade of quiet change, stubborn pride, and more than a little tension beneath the surface. Robbinsdale wasn't growing anymore, and in fact, for the first time, it was shrinking. The kids were moving out, families were heading west to places like Maple Grove, and what was left behind was a town settling into itself, older, slower, and holding tight to its roots. But this wasn't a sleepy decade, far from it. This was the era of Tree City USA pride, of towering oaks overlooking Grimes Pond, and a community that still believed in the power of its history. It was also a time of big transitions, schools closing, beloved buildings burning down, and a downtown trying to figure out what came next. We'll talk about the rise and the fall of Robbinsdale's attempt at mall culture, from the excitement of Ward's Terrace Mall and its buzzing arcade, to the slow fade into empty storefronts. We'll remember the businesses, the characters, and the places that gave the town its flavor, from the Muni and Adolphs to late nights, wrestling legends, and a certain burger boy just trying to do his job. And at the heart of it all, we'll revisit one of the most emotional chapters in Robbinsdale history, the fight over the high school, a battle that divided the community, sparked lawsuits, and left a mark that people still feel decades later. So this is a story about change. What happens when a town stops growing and starts looking inward? It's about memory, identity, and the way a place holds on to what matters, even as everything around it shifts. So settle in with the president of the Robbinsdale Historical Society, Pete Ritchie. The 1980s in Robbinsdale are calling.
It's the 1980s. The census. In 1980, we had 14,422 souls. And so that was a decline of 2,423 since 1970, indicating that Robbinsdale was fully developed. We didn't have any increase in population for many years after that. We just had an increasing senior population as the town just aged. And this is what I remember growing up, that everybody on my block was in their 70s and 80s. Most of the kids had moved away. It seemed like in the 70s, a lot of younger families headed out to Maple Grove. And what was left in the neighborhood were older people or people that were downsizing or people that had just never left the house that they had built in the late 40s or early 50s. Robbinsdale was one of 10 Minnesota cities to be named Tree City USA. And all over the town, these little signs went up that said Tree City USA. And we were so proud of ourselves. We were green. We had a city forester. And they were keeping track and had a little census of all the trees, and they still keep track of the trees. We had the city forester come out and speak at the Historical Society. The oldest trees in Robbinsdale are overlooking Grimes Pond. There is a hillside there of oaks that predate any of the farms in the area because it was a really steep incline, and nobody ever bothered to chop down the nice old oaks there. So we've always had a lot of pride in our trees, and that goes all the way back to Andrew B. Robbins, who had this vision of planting trees up and down the boulevards and up and down his driveway and up and down the main street. And then if you think of Victory Memorial Drive and the way that was laid out, we're going to have a memorial to our war dead in Robbinsdale. It's going to be trees, and there's a tree planted for every soldier that we lost in Hennepin County along Victory Memorial Drive. It's also a decade where things keep getting torn down and closed. So I think of along West Broadway, they tore down this old gas station that was Robbinsdale Oil and a couple other little commercial buildings there. And they just start building these giant buildings. First, it was a U.S. Bank building, and that was their offices. There was a Pizza Hut and a couple other little businesses back there, and they started disappearing. A Red Barn was back there. And then after that, in the mid-80s, they build this thing called Robbinsdale Town Center, and it's three stories tall and has this great big tower and kind of overlooks Highway 81, and Robbins Center is on the other side of the highway from it. I mean, it's still kind of a thriving little place. Different things go in and out of it. There's a big bar space in there. There's room for a couple restaurants. There's a Greek restaurant that's been there for a long time. But generally, the tenants are things like Subway or Cost Cutters, and a tobacco shop is always there. There always seems to be a tobacco hookah My guess is as Robbinsdale continues to become more and more progressive, we'll probably see a dispensary there at some point. Just another little piece of shopping. And along the downtown, we still have some shops, but they're less exciting. They're the sort of things that I used to, you know, it was like Carol's Crafts. There would be a yarn shop, and there would be a typewriter repair man or a tax place. It wasn't as fun as it is now. Of course, we still had the 3-2 bar, Adolph's, and we had the municipal bar, which was the only place you could get a stiff drink in Robbinsdale because we had municipal liquor. That place was legendary. It attracted pro wrestlers, people like Kurt Hennig, people like Rick Rude would show up there, and there's always stories about them going out back after the bar closed and wrestling in the back. Where Carol's Craft was next door to the Muni was the old Fawcett building, which was 3 stories tall, and McDonald's was right behind it. And the drive-thru, in order to get to McDonald's, you'd drive off West Broadway past this older building. And I had a friend that had an apartment up there, although I say he's a friend, but he's an older guy in my neighborhood. And he never invited me up to his apartment, but I remember them sitting on the fire escape because it overlooked where I would take out the garbage at McDonald's. And they'd always be sitting out there with a couple beers or smoking cigarettes. And when I would come out of McDonald's in my little polyester hat and my polyester pants and shirt, they would just start making fun of me and calling me Burger Boy. And not sure they ever tossed beer cans at me, but I would hurry back inside before they did. Robbinsdale still looked a lot alike, but things were changing in a hurry. In about 1986, Adolph's burns down. And the story we always like to tell about that is it was across the street from the fire station. And it had fire alarms and smoke alarms and sprinklers, but somehow it just managed to burn to the ground. But Adolph's kind of had a reputation at that point of basically you had grumpy old men in there. Or you had kids, because there was a couple pool tables and they didn't seem to blink if you were 16 and wanted to come in and get a 3-2. There was also another 3-2 bar that was just down the street from the police and fire station. And that one was called the Pub. At one time it had been called the Robbinsdale Wreck, and it was kind of known for hamburgers. And the police and fire station was still being used. They weren't having teen dances anymore, but they had dance lessons up on the 3rd floor. So ballet dancing, tap dancing, all the girls in the neighborhood would go there for their dance lessons. So during that time in the early 80s, Bill Blonigan gets elected to the city council for the first time in 1981. Now Blonigan served on the city council all the way through the 80s, through the 90s. And in the 2020s, he was elected as mayor, and he served one term as mayor, and he's retired now. But if you just think about that 40 years on the city council, a few years as mayor, all that experience. And of course, we know his family is from Robbinsdale. His daughter has been very active in Golden Valley politics. You know, we continue our saga of closing schools in District 281 as the kid population continues to shrink and the grandpa population continues to grow. Lee School was the oldest elementary school, and they closed it because of declining enrollment in the school district. However, there were a group of parents that included David and Barbara Southward, Dwayne and Karen Frederick, Sue Leland and John Holtz, and they were all up in arms, and they wanted to fight to save Lee School because it had the least enrollment decline out of all the other schools. It had the best facilities. It had, you know, a cafeteria, theater, gymnasium, but it was the oldest school, even if though it was the biggest and the best one. It was the oldest, and it was in Robbinsdale, and they certainly weren't going to close a school like in Golden Valley or New Hope or any of the finer suburbs. They always closed the school in Robbinsdale. By the fall of 1981, the school district is looking at enrollment all over the place, and they're trying to decide what to do with their high schools. A little bit of a foreshadowing. They were looking at closing Cooper High School. We couldn't close Armstrong High School because it was the newest high school. And what I always remember about this argument was that Cooper was built maybe 7 years after Robbinsdale High School was built, and Armstrong was built maybe 13 years after Robbinsdale High School was built. But they always said Robbinsdale was such an old school. It was so much older than the other schools. I mean, just look at it. The place is falling apart. We're going to need a new high school. They spent all sorts of time batting around and debating it, and there were all sorts of special meetings where they tried to decide which high school they were going to close, and they wouldn't necessarily let people into those meetings. So there were lawsuits filed because there was an open door policy and you couldn't have a meeting about which high school you were going to close without letting the public weigh in or at least be there. It just went on, and we'll get to that a little bit later because something far more exciting happened before they ever talked about closing the high school. And that was the Ward's Terrace Mall. For years, people in Robbinsdale had gone out to Brookdale because that was the big indoor mall. And everybody in the 1980s loved an indoor mall. You went out there and you found your friends and you could be out there in any kind of weather. And Robbins Center was this old kind of rundown strip mall. And who wants to go there except they had the Wax Museum. So that was a great place to go pick up the latest records. And you had Tony behind the counter telling you if the record you bought was cool or not. And just kind of giving you his musical critique on everything you bought, which some of us found very valuable. And we all looked up to Tony. And sometimes I was a little bit annoyed when he made fun of the records I was buying. He would call REO Speedwagon, REO Chuckwagon. And I don't know if I can buy this record now. So he wasn't maybe the best one for business, but he had some opinions, and that was always fun. So Brookdale, you know, there was a couple stores out there, but we never got to know the people who worked in those stores. There was a Rocky Rococo's Pizza. There was a great big multiplex. So if your movie wasn't showing at the Terrace, you could get yourself out to Brookdale and see the movie there. So it was really exciting, the idea that we were going to have a Brookdale right here in Robbinsdale. I mean, we knew it was going to be on the same scale, but it was an indoor mall. And at one end of the mall, you had this big anchor with Montgomery Ward's. At the end of the mall, you could see the big sign glowing, Montgomery Ward's. And then you had a great big open courtyard. And around that courtyard, a Lancers clothing store opened. This was clothing that wasn't quite cool enough because they didn't actually sell Izod's with the little alligator on it. But they sold shirts that looked just like Izod's, but they had a little tiger on them. And they were called La Tigra. And that was almost as cool as any Izod that the other kids had. You had a pet shop. You had a place called Small Treasures or World Treasures. And these were little gift items from all over the world. You had Walden Books. And that was pretty exciting to have a little chain bookstore in there. You had the Radio Shack. You had the Whirl-a-Whip. So a great place to get a yogurt. You had a Duff's Smorgasbord. And this employed so many people. I don't know how many kids got to wear these goofy little hats to work at the Duff's Smorgasbord. And you could go there and it was an all-you-can-eat sort of thing. But across the hall from Duff's Smorgasbord, you had a Golden Razor Barber. And you had the Time Out Video Arcade. I mean, I can't believe that mall ever failed. The amount of kids that swarmed the Time Out Video Arcade every day. It was just, you know, there was 20, 30 kids in there playing pinball, playing video games, putting those quarters in the slots. I used all the money from my paper route to play Dig Dug, to play Space Invaders, to play Defender. I mean, I'm remembering these games coming out when Donkey Kong first comes out. We couldn't wait for the next video game to come along. The other thing that was great about Time Out is the guys who worked there, they dressed like cops. They had little change dispensers that they wore on their belts. And if you told them that your machine, you know, the quarter didn't work, they would give you a special little red quarter and you could put that in. And it didn't seem like they ever questioned it. Like, they just wanted to give us red quarters. So we love Time Out. And then the other end of the indoor mall was a Applebaum's. So Applebaum's was this smaller grocery chain, and they weren't as fancy as Byerly's, but they were a little bit fancy, and they had a Taste of France was their bakery, and you could go get French bread there and these sort of cheese breads, and I loved the Taste of France, and I loved Applebaum's, and the ceiling was, this was the first time I'd ever seen a ceiling where they didn't put in ceiling tiles. They just painted all the pipes and the electricals and everything, but in Applebaum's, it was all painted red. So you went into this place and it was so red. When it became Rainbow, which it did just a couple of years later, Rainbow took over Applebaum's, and they went in there and they painted it all white. White shows dingy and dirtiness. And then years later, you know, Rainbow was just a notorious place. It was a terrible place. You know, it just there was constantly shoplifting and just all sorts of problems with Rainbow Foods. People were scared to shop at Rainbow Foods. It was a mess. I still think it was maybe because the ceiling looked so dingy. If they had just kept it as Applebaum's and kept it that beautiful red, brick red, it just looked like such a classier place. The moment they painted it white, the whole mall went downhill. And it wasn't just Rainbow. All the other little stores started closing just one by one. And they started being replaced with stores that were just so much less fun. Bathroom Update or something. And who wants to go to that Bathroom Update? That's not going to be any fun. I want to go to the Video Arcade. And of course, they closed the Video Arcade and they closed the Smorgasbord. And pretty soon the mall was just sitting there, this empty indoor mall. It was still this great big courtyard. And they would try and do things to revive it. They would have an art fair, or they would have an event where all the Cub Scouts would come out and race remote-controlled cars around the mall and anything they could, but there was just no hope for it. Of course, when you get into the 90s, they decided that they could turn an indoor mall into a strip mall, and they basically eliminated the courtyard, punched out a couple holes through it, and then you could suddenly drive through it, and it became a strip mall, and then there was a Blockbuster and whatever sort of retail you needed in the 1990s. And of course, this is all gone now because Hy-Vee's there. I'm not even sure that many people have fond memories of the Ward's Terrace Mall, but to us, you know, to have a Video Arcade right there in our own neighborhood and to have a mall, I mean, everybody still went out to Brookdale because Brookdale was 10 times the size of the Ward's Terrace Mall. Why anybody thought this mall was going to succeed, who knows? It's kind of a long list of failures in Robbinsdale retail and malls, because again, in the 1980s, you get the Town Center Mall. I'm not sure that any retail has ever really survived in there. It's always been dentists and medical things, but it was billed as it was going to be this other mall. It was going to be across the street from Robbins Center, and it was going to have all this great glamorous retail. And we're lucky that at some point somebody looked at downtown Robbinsdale and said, this would be great for restaurants and maybe a brew pub, a couple other things, because none of the retail endeavors in Robbinsdale ever succeeded. And maybe it's that way everywhere. I think Golden Valley actually did better with their Golden Valley Center as a rehab a couple times. Robbins Center, it's still there. It's got Broadway Pizza in it. You know, again, restaurants seem to do better, but most of the other retail there now is like, you know, a Boost Mobile, and it doesn't have the retail mix that a lot of other suburbs have. Oh, let's go back to high school. It was a long, terrible fight for the high school. The fall of 1981, two-thirds of the residents in District 281 were angry when the school board was thinking about closing, you know, Cooper, and then thinking about closing Armstrong. And because they said, well, this was the newest school. But the thing about Armstrong, it was also the most expensive school to operate. So the voters approved an $8.5 million increase to the financial budget, and they were trying to think of how are we going to use this to keep Armstrong open, and how are we going to use this to keep other schools open. Everybody in town maybe sort of knew that they were going to close Robbinsdale High School, that they were just, what's the word, blowing smoke. What, they were just blowing smoke up our behinds. They could us all think that maybe they would close Cooper and maybe they would close Armstrong because it was so expensive to operate. E.J. Cooper was still alive, and he came to a school board meeting and explained, with tears running down his face, why he didn't want them to close the school that was named after him. So we knew it wasn't going to be Cooper that was going to get closed. Again, there were all sorts of hysterics about it. So the school board had hired a disinterested panel of three to make a recommendation as to which high school would be closed on April 27th. After months of being deadlocked, the school board voted to close Robbinsdale Senior High School. Surprise, surprise. So tensions ran high in Robbinsdale. So two citizens, Joy Robb and Keith Moberg, filed a suit charging a violation of the open meeting law because they didn't make all these decisions in the light of day. And the trial began on June 21st. The judge merely fined each school board member $100. The parents appealed to the Supreme Court. There was just a lot of heartache. They say that the heartache in Robbinsdale was supreme. And having lost three schools in just 4 years, we were really annoyed. We still feel picked on. If you gather up any group of people from Robbinsdale in the 70s and 80s and talk about the high school being closed, they're still upset about it. But there it was. It was all over. Joy Robb actually went on to become mayor. So a couple other items from the 1980s. Of course, we need to mention Helen Blodgett. When I was a kid, my mom brought home this book that was called Robbinsdale Then and Now, and I read it cover to cover. She came out with one edition of it, maybe a year earlier than the second edition of it. I think she felt like she had to add a chapter just about closing of the high school and the closing of some of the other schools. I remember the first one that came out was Brown, and they re-released it with a blue cover. And if Tullin was instrumental in getting the Historical Society going, taking care of the events that the Historical Society did at the time. She spent a fair amount of time recording people, and unfortunately these things are all on cassette tapes and they're degenerated, and I want to cry every time I put one into a cassette player and I can't make hide nor hair of it. Maybe at some point AI can help us bring back some of those tapes that she did. And we have objects from Helen Hira in the Historical Society because she worked with the Red Cross during World War II, and we have that great piece of shrapnel. She liked to tell her family story too, about the first post office and her grandfather delivering rural route mail delivery, Isaac Patch. She just had a long storied history in Robbinsdale. I have been referring to her book over and over. Before Helen's book, there was a book by a woman named Hartig. Helen credits her, and it's funny because years later I found the notes for Hartig's book and the long lists of people. These are the people that served in the Civil War. These are the people that started the library club. These are the very first people that were on the village board. We can find all that stuff, but it's just so handy. And Helen also put an index in her book, so whenever we're looking up a last name, we can find it. The only problem with Helen's book is it ends in 1983. It's a year-by-year history of Robbinsdale, and for years, we've dreamed that somebody pick up the torch and carry on. Start with 1984. So we're always looking for that person if you're out there. Come on in. Kudos to Helen Blodgett. Thank you for inspiring us all to be so interested in Robbinsdale history. Another thing that happened in those early 80s is after years of attempting to solve the parking problem around North Memorial Hospital, and even a referendum in 1978 that was defeated, the hospital finally built a second parking ramp. The city kicked in $300,000. They kicked in some city-owned land. They had to vacate a couple alleys. But the new parking ramp went up, and it was huge, and they put a heliport on the top of it. And it was much harder to get into than the old parking ramp, so the neighborhood kids never had the chance to have the fun that they did in the old parking ramp. But it was a great big thing, and it helped a lot with the parking congestion in the residential streets that were in the area that were always filling up with hospital employees. On October 30th, a new park was created at 41st and Xenia Alba Avenues. It was formally dedicated and named for Norma DuBois Kelly, who was on the Housing Authority since 1972. So this is the woman that really was in charge of getting rid of the little alley houses, the little substandard homes that sat back on the lot, and somebody had always intended to build a better home in front of them or next to them, but never did. You know, it was a big deal for our little town to have its own sort of economic development authority and housing authority, and it probably resulted in better quality homes throughout the city. But she was also active in preserving open space. So they planted a whole bunch of trees in the new park on Arbor Day, because that's our thing in Robbinsdale. We love to plant new trees. And for several years, many Robbinsdale residents, that there was no park and no open space on the west side of Highway 100. How come there's parks all over the rest of the town? How come that neighborhood didn't have a park? So they finally figured out a way to configure one there. And they blocked off a street, and they used some open land on either side, and they created Norma Kelly Park. And in 1982, there were two big events. There was a paralyzing snowstorm of 16.5 inches on December 28th. The other was the presentation of a reverse referendum petition to the school board on December 20th, with about 5,000 signatures requesting that there be another election on the $8.5 million increase that was approved in the fall of 1981. And the citizens were surprised that the school board, who had pleaded that they had a shortage of money, would then lose the most efficient and economically operated high school. The board disallowed the petition. Then Joy Robb took him to court and said, you can't sell the land that Robbinsdale High School is on. And not only that, you can't sell the land that Robbinsdale Junior High School was on. Probably the reason why we have Robbinsdale Middle School, which they're closing now, was because Joy Robb said that land can't be sold. There were some goofy ideas to turn it into a technology learning campus or to sell it to a junior college, Rasmussen Business School. There were all sorts of ideas to for that building, but Charlie Rapp kind of put a big roadblock in the school district's ideas about what they were going to do with that. They did eventually get to sell the land that the junior high was on, and that became what I like to call Bino Village there at 42nd and Iowa 100, where you have these three-story townhomes, and they have a strange colonial look to them, which is odd. I think I associate that look with the early 60s, but that went up in the 2000s. Let's just say we're at 1984. And at this time, I'd been a paper boy, so I'd had a job or two. I delivered the afternoon paper, the Minneapolis Star. And of course, when the Star gave up and we just had the morning paper, I didn't want to do that anymore. But it's funny, when you delivered the Star, you had to do your route after school, but you also had the Saturday and Sunday routes because the morning guy needed the weekend off. But for some reason, the guy who did the afternoon papers didn't need the weekend off. So paper boys worked 7 days a week. You went and did your route after school, and then you got up early in the morning on Saturday and early in the morning on Sunday. My route was down there on France Avenue, kind of the through McNair Manor, and Drew Avenue, a couple other little streets in there. But I had, on Sundays, I might have like 120 papers, and I had a giant cart, and I had to push it up Tanker Hill and then come back down. And I'd always carry a radio with me and crank up the KQ as I went along. And I remember The Who have this song where Roger Daltrey is yelling, "Rain on me, rain on me, rain on me." And then the rain just came pouring down. For some reason, that one just always stuck with me. And another time, my little sister had come along with me, and we had brought a snack and we decided to stop and sit and eat a snack on this guy's front steps. You know, we put the paper on the steps, and then we sat down on the steps and reading the snack, and we're talking. And all of a sudden, this giant shirtless man that looked a little bit like Conan comes around the corner, and he's carrying a giant Bowie knife. And I'm like, "What? We're just delivering the paper." And he's like, "I thought you guys were burglars. What are you doing? Get out of here." That was always fun, delivering the newspaper. And then I delivered the Post, which was a shopper that would roll up and put a rubber band around and then fling across the yard into somebody's bushes. And everybody in your entire area got that newspaper. And then we had, on Wednesdays, there was a weekly Post paper that would come and be put inside the door or under the mat or somehow more ceremoniously laid out for your customers. Back then, you had to collect. After you got done delivering the papers, then you'd walk through the neighborhoods and knock on the door and say, you know, "Newspaper, collect," or something like that. And maybe they'd come to the door. Maybe they'd just ignore you because they didn't want to pay for it. And whenever you needed a little extra money, though, what I used to do is just say, "Well, I'm going to be out of town for like a couple weeks, and I got Buddy, he's doing the route for me. And I was just wondering if maybe you would pay up like through the end of the month so that he doesn't have to come and collect." And they always would. And that would give me a little extra spending money to go down to the store. There was Price's Grocery, which was a tiny little grocery on Drew Avenue down in McNair Manor. And I like to buy entire jars of maraschino cherries and just sit on the steps and eat those. There was plenty of work to do for young people. But my next job, a friend of mine in the neighborhood says, "Pete, you want to get a job with me? We can work at Twin City Music." I'm like, "Twin City Music, what's that?" "Well, you just call people on the phone. You ask them if they want to subscribe to this music service." I'm like, "Okay, that sounds great." So I go down to this little building that is, I think it's about where Town Center is now. They put me in a little booth, and everybody is smoking in this little boiler room, for lack of a better term. And, you know, I'm like in ninth grade. I don't even know why they hired me, but sure, I'll have a cigarette. And so we're all sitting there smoking, and we're calling people up, and we're saying, "Hey, you know, would you like to subscribe to our excellent music program?" Most of the time, people would just hang up on you. And then I remember down in the basement, there were a bunch of shady looking people, and they were all smoking, and they were, you know, talking about how much money they were bringing in and what they were going to do. And then one day I just show up for work and the door's locked and there's nobody there. And there was nobody there ever again. So they all just packed up, and then I brought my check over to the bank and it bounced. And so there was no money to be made there.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
the Saturday to see our friends. Young bus back home, sitting hand in hand. When the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends in Robbinsdale.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.